This is S.M. Sterling, and you're listening to Through the Aftermath.
Welcome back, everyone, to this 19th episode of Through the Aftermath. My name is Sean Schuster. I'm your host, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jonathan. How you doing, Jonathan?
I am doing fantastic.
Awesome. How's the Wasteland treating you today?
You know, the Wasteland today, and the Wasteland I speak of is, of course, Fallen Earth, with today being what it is, which we will get to momentarily. It's treating me very well, although you would not notice it from the Fallen Earth forums, where it appears that half of the people there apparently sat on a Nuka-Cola bottle cap or something, because, wow, yeah, there's half the people are like, woohoo, and the other half are like, kill you all. So, yeah, I'm one of those that's happy to be in that forum right now, so.
So, actually, I didn't even read it, but I'm actually afraid to. So there's a lot of complaining going on, or?
Well, what it is, you know, with it finally going to launch, you know, everybody's sort of, like, coming in full force, and of course, you know, because it's, you know, everybody knows that the date got pushed back to the 22nd. Well, they were nice enough to still let us all in early. And I'm kind of treating that like an official still beta. Like, it's not open beta anymore. It's like the paid beta, but I'm still treating the next 2 weeks up until the official launch as, you know, come on guys, let's be, you know, it's more of an open beta that they're being nice enough to let just us into. And we probably just need to let them have some time, you know, and there's still some interesting things they're working on, but you know what? I have faith. If anybody can do it, they can.
I guess I didn't think about that being like an open beta just for us, but all I do know is that there are a lot of people in there right now. When I played it actually went live at 2 o'clock today. We're recording this on the 9th, and it went live at 2 o'clock Eastern, and I went in there about 2:30 because I actually I kind of messed up. I had everything set up. But you have to go under your account and you have to actually subscribe, which I didn't do. And why won't it let me in? It kept saying your account is closed, and I'm like, what? And then I went under my account and I'm like, oh, subscribe, yes. So I did that, and so I got in about 2:30, and it was just packed. I started out in Midway, the starter city Midway, which is kind of like the crafting city.
And that place is pretty packed.
Yeah, it was really packed. But surprisingly, I didn't really notice too much more lag than normal. Like throughout the open beta, there was a little bit of lag here and there where like we were talking about it last show, where like monsters would all of a sudden appear over here. You know, they'd kind of like skate across the land really fast. And that was something that happened very rarely, I think. But I noticed just about the same amount of that happening now. So basically what I'm saying is it's not that bad. It wasn't what you'd expect.
Yeah.
You know, the servers are up and we're playing. Yeah. So that's definitely a plus. But yeah, there were a few things I wanted to talk about with Fallen Earth today, because of course, at the time we're recording this is the beginning of the pre-order head start. So if you pre-ordered, you get to start today. And you get to actually play for 2 weeks ahead of everyone else. Because the launch, which was just announced a couple days ago, the launch has been moved up to September 22nd.
Yes.
So it's a sad day for those who didn't pre-order. But it's a happy day for those of us who did pre-order. Let me just, before we get started with all that, let me just ask you, how did you pre-order?
Oh, yes. You're referring to the ATV versus horse incident,
right,
of 2009. I actually ordered it right directly through the site. At Direct to Drive, it's more like probably me being picky, because in the past, a couple of the games I got from them, it was kind of touch and go. I had some weird experiences with them in the past, but I'm the kind of person who just likes to have that executable and boom, there it is, it's done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Steam would have been better, because I like Steam, because you can always put it back on your hard drive at any given moment. But Yeah, hey, you know, it's to have it right directly from them and have it all be done, and yeah, it's nice. Plus, I like the ATV. It's fine.
Yeah, I actually chose the same thing. I chose it from the Fallen Earth site just because I wanted that ATV. I know that the horse you get is actually a really cool looking horse, but it's supposed to be level 12, or at least the stats are like level 12. And I know that when you're about level 5 or 6, you can actually make a horse. Once you save up enough money and materials and everything, you can make a horse, or I'm sorry, train a horse. You can train a horse that is about level 15. And that's pretty early on, so that would make that thing obsolete pretty quickly.
Exactly.
So that's why I went for the ATV. But that said, I mean, I don't regret the choice, but the ATV I don't like as much as the horses. I think I'm going to drive it until I get the level 15 horse, but I don't know. It can't jump. I've hit curbs before and just stopped, and I'm like, whoa, what's this? I don't know. I mean, I'm not complaining. It's just that it's kind of cool, but I can't wait to get into the bigger vehicles, you know, like the Interceptor. That's going to be awesome.
Oh, I know. You bring up a very good point because, there was those of you who followed the forums, and this brings up a little side point there. I've actually run into a few of our, you know, listeners in the forums. Yeah, me and Sean are actually both in the forums if you wanted to, like, friend us in there. Mm-hmm. And I peruse the forums quite a bit, so. But yeah, in the forums, everybody knows that, like, for a while there was this big uproar over, you know, the people who ordered from Director Drive got the horse, and then here comes the ATV, and there's people like, how dare you? You cheated us! And really what you said just hit it on the head. It's a vehicle you're probably only going to use for a second.
Yeah.
And so, everybody, you know, you're going to end up with something bigger. It really doesn't matter. You're going to end up with a horse eventually or an ATV anyway. And, you know, kudos to Fallen Earth is still in beta. People like to joke with. Remember, Star Wars Galaxies didn't have vehicles for 6 months. So we're still ahead of them. So there it is.
Heck, didn't even World of Warcraft, it took them a while to get all that?
You know, that's a good question. I missed the boat on that. Like, I played it way at the beginning, but I was totally, like, not messing with the mounts up until that point. But you may be correct, because they were dealing with some interesting stuff back at the beginning.
Yeah. But, another thing I wanted to talk about with this pre-order and with the launch of Fallen Earth for real this time, and, you know, we get to keep our characters and everything, is it's like we talked about last week. We want to start a clan. You know, we want to get through the aftermath fans together. You know, we want to get this whole community. This is something that when we even started this whole podcast, we wanted it to be kind of a community thing, you know, for post-apocalyptic people, you know, who enjoy mostly games, but also everything else in you know, media. So we want to start a clan. Now, that said, I don't want to run a clan, and I know I touched on that last time. I don't think that I would have enough time to really dedicate to running the clan properly. But I know there's someone out there right now listening who would jump at that chance and who would love to do that. So if you want to do that, you know, by all means, do it. And Jonathan and I, we will join it, and I think it would be great to get us all together and play, because we actually get a lot of emails from people who asking, you know, when we're going to play, what our names will be, and things like that. Now, when I restart the forums, actually, by the time you read this, when the forums are back up, I will make a board for Through the Aftermath guilds and clans, and that could encompass any post-apocalyptic game that anybody wants to play in. And that could include, you know, like Earthrise is coming out, Huxley, anything like that, Global Agenda, but especially right now with Fallen Earth. So we could start a discussion in there about maybe a clan name. I was thinking, even if we just named it Through the Aftermath, I think that would be a pretty cool kinship. I think that would be a pretty cool clan name, and I think that would work. But of course, anyone is welcome to name it whatever they want. I just think that it would be cool to kind of tie it in with, you know, Through the Aftermath or Aftermath or anything like that with the show. But if you get in the game and you want to friend me, my name is Ampersand. Like, you know, the and sign in English, the ampersand. So if you don't know how to spell that, look it up. But that's actually, I have this whole theme going where I'm going to name all my characters after grammatical phrases or words. So ampersand, that's me. And Jonathan, you don't have one set up yet, right?
Yeah, I'm about to roll my guy tonight. In fact, I pretty much came home from work and went right to this. But you know what? This actually is perfect timing because this is going to answer a question I've had and a question that has been brought up many times. One of the questions everybody had was, which faction are we going to be, and is this going to complicate things? Because I on the Virgin World site, I kind of was saying, you know, after thinking about it, you know, I was toying around, and it kind of looked like I'd be on the tech side faction. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, we might have somebody else who's on the other side of the spectrum, and everybody was even curious, like, you know, what is Sean? What's he going to be, you think?
Yeah.
So
well, let me tell you, this show is going to be about Dragon Con, and we're going to talk about Dragon Con. But while I was at Dragon Con, I went and I hung out with about four or five of the Fallen Earth developers. And one of them was the guy who made the Lightbearers and the – what's the other side? The Tex, I believe? No.
Yeah, I think – what was it?
Lightbearers and Travelers.
Travelers, that's right.
So he made the – they're the opposites on the wheel. I might have that wrong, but I know it was Lightbearers and whatever the opposite is. Anyway, he's the guy who wrote the story for these two. And I said, I have some questions for you. You know, I said, can you get a clan together with guys that are in, opposite factions or different factions? He says, yeah, definitely. You can even be in the same group and do the same missions with people who are in different factions. But he said, here's the thing. Each faction has its own special quests. So if you are a Lightbearer and you have a special Lightbearer quest, which tells you to go kill Travelers, and then you're playing with Travelers in your group, that's where it gets tricky. Because if your Traveler is in your group and you kill Travelers, he will actually lose Traveler faction. You know what I mean? So it's almost like he is becoming a traitor to his own people. So while you're gaining reputation with Lightbearer, he is actually losing his reputation.
Interesting. You know, I did this never dawned on me. I don't know how I missed that. And that might even be something they want to kind of go the extra mile to kind of promote that idea because,
yeah.
You know, I, you can see that, you know, people automatically assume that we couldn't do that. But it makes sense. I mean, it would make sense that they would still be able to sort of team up because it's just an ideal. I mean,
yeah.
I might like Pepsi and somebody else might like Coke, but that doesn't mean we can't go to Six Flags together. You know what I mean? So
that's a great analogy. but yeah, that's the way it's set up, and I think that's great because I told him, you know, I don't like all the barriers we have, you know, Horde versus Alliance and different, you know, things like that where you can't really play together with your friends. This opens it up, and I think that's great because we don't have to choose a faction, and we can be whatever we want. We can mix and match, and that's I love that. So yeah, that's not a concern of ours anymore. That's
great.
So Jonathan still has to make his character. Mine is Ampersand, and we are looking forward to anyone who wants to make a clan, and it'll be kind of cool to play with people. I know like I said, we've received a lot of email from people, and we're actually going to read a few email to kind of catch up a little bit because we're getting pretty far behind. We're almost to 20 now, and we need to catch up. But but was there anything else about Fallen Earth that you wanted to mention before we get into the Dragon Con talk?
Yeah, actually, just two things really quick, and this kind of just reiterates what you were saying. You know, I what I'll probably do, like, with you having the forums back up tomorrow, I think, you know, probably look for me on the forums. That's probably where I'll just let everybody know what my character name is. But the other thing that dawned on me was just, and this was looking through the patch notes, I guess they put a little alert for this in Fallen Earth. But on the off chance you miss it, this is a pretty big piece. One of the things they were mentioning is if you have an NVIDIA card, what you need to do to make this game run better for you is you need to go into your NVIDIA control panel, and there is a setting for what is the maximum pre-rendered frames in the game, and you need to set that just to be 1. And I think what it is basically I believe it's referring to like when games double buffer, they will actually set 2 frames consecutively up at almost the same time so that you don't have to wait for the vertical sync of your monitor. Well, in this case, I think it's actually adding to the lag. And so what you're doing is you're actually overriding that and saying, you know, no matter what, just render 1 frame at a time. And I guess that's a pretty big performance boost, but it was big enough that they felt the need to put a big box about it. So for those of you out there who may have missed this, it sounds like that's a pretty big performance help right there. So, yeah, we'll watch. Hopefully that's just something they can just activate automatically. We'll see.
Wow. You know, I didn't even know about that, and I use NVIDIA card. So that might help me out a little bit.
Same here. Same here.
That's cool.
And I haven't tested that theory. This is just something I noticed today. But yeah, you just go in the NVIDIA control panel. If you go under 3D settings, and then there's an area that says manage 3D settings. Or if you're, and I believe you could probably do the same thing if you have that program enhancer for, you know, forcing anti-aliasing, that type of thing. But yeah, you basically want to set it so no matter what, in Fallen Earth, the control panel has to be set to 1 for pre-rendered frames. And it should help. I'm actually curious to try that with normal and go back and try it just down to 1. And if anybody tries that, let us know what kind of performance gain you got, because that's one of those that's big enough that you almost are like, is there a way you could just do that for us or patch that or something? That's like huge.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I'll definitely have to try that.
Same here.
Sounds cool. All right, so I guess we only had one little other piece of news, and this is just a little thing here. But we've talked about this before. But the movie 9, that's by Pixar, isn't it?
Or I don't think it's Pixar, but I almost want to say it was Tim Burton and I believe the guy who directed Wanted. So Tim Burton produced it. So
that's something we've talked about before. It's a kind of an animated movie. And that is a post-apocalyptic movie, and it came out today, actually, on 9909. So look for that. I'm going to be busy this weekend, but I might try to catch that next week because I really want to see that.
Yeah, it looks really, really wild. Very stylish.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the DragonCon stuff. This weekend, let me just explain. This weekend I went to DragonCon, this past weekend, and DragonCon is it's kind of a fan convention of all different kinds of anything you could be into. Superheroes to Star Wars, Star Trek, you know, there's sci-fi, fantasy, everything you could think about or think of is there. And this is in Atlanta, Georgia, and it's about four or five days long, depending on when you go. But it was a lot of fun. This is my first Dragon Con. It was a ton of fun. It was absolutely amazing. Just all the costumes and everything. And actually, if you're interested in seeing a lot more about the costumes, I'm putting together a video now that will be on Massively.com probably either tomorrow or the next day. And it's just a compilation of kind of the best costumes I saw. But the one that's going to – Jonathan, you got to check this out, because the one that really got me is they actually had Raiders. They had a parade going on. And in this parade, they had different like genres. You know, they had the superheroes all walking together. And then they had a Lord of the Rings group called the Arms of Middle-Earth, I think it was called. And then they had these Raiders. And these guys were amazing. They looked – I mean, they had real salvaged stuff. Like, the one guy had a shield made out of a stop sign. I mean, how cool is that? You know? And they just had actually, another guy had a shield made out of an interstate sign. So it was pretty cool. They had these guys. There were probably, I don't know, maybe 15 of these guys walking around. But the coolest thing was they had Humongous's vehicle.
Oh, yeah, that giant, like, caged car thing that he was standing on.
Yeah, they had that, and they had on the front they had two dummies that were tied up to look like the ones that were in the movie. And then this thing was huge. It was like it must have been like a giant truck frame, and then they built this car on top of it, the body of it, and the guy driving it was dressed just like Humongous. And then they had Toadie, you know, the guy that says the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla.
Yeah, yeah, the guy gets his hand chopped off.
Yeah, he was on the top. The guy dressed just like him was on the top, and he was yelling out, and it was so great. And I took video of that, and it was so cool. I was just like beside myself when I saw that. It was so great.
That's awesome.
And so that's going to be in the video if you want to check that out at Massively.com. It should be coming up either tomorrow. Well, I'll say either Thursday or Friday. Somewhere around there. So hopefully by the time this releases, it'll be out. And then what I did was I went to they had a whole post-apocalyptic track. Now, unfortunately, I didn't get to go to a lot of this because I had my own panels that I spoke at. But I did get to go to a few of them, like three, I think. Most of them were about kind of philosophies about, you know, the end of the world, or skepticism about how the world is going to end. I mean, there was some really serious discussion in there, and then there was really funny discussion. There was this one with these guys. I think it was called needcoffee.com. It's like this comedy troupe podcast. And if anyone out there has heard of that, I might be saying it wrong. I think it's needcoffee.com. But they were hilarious. They were just up there in a panel, and they were talking about kind of their favorite aspects of post-apocalyptic. And they were like, you know, hey, who remembers that movie, this so-and-so? And then people would raise their hand, and then you'd get this discussion going. And it was really, really cool. It was a lot of fun. They were even talking about Wasteland. They're like, hey, who here remembers Wasteland? And, like, two people raised their hand, and I'm like, come on. Come on, people. But that was a lot of fun. We also went to a costuming panel all about how to dress up as a raider or a post-apocalyptic. And that, you know what? I have to say, when I went to Dragon Con, I thought, you know, I like these costumes that these people dress up in. I would never do it myself, but I think it's pretty cool. When I saw the parade, it really put it into a whole new light for me. And then when I went to this panel where they were talking about how to actually assemble the costumes, I you know what I said? I said, I have to do this. I have to make one of these. They were talking about the coolest stuff. Like, he made these arm guards, the shoulder guards, out of old tires.
Oh.
And then he put bolts through them, and he used like a football shoulder pads for the base. And then he put the tires on top of it. And then he used some parts of the tire.
Like super mutants do.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And then he used some parts for his arms. He had like chains. He was just talking about the things that they go and find and like where they find them. Like they go to junkyards, they go to flea markets. He said that even you can even walk on the side of a pretty busy road and you can find a lot of stuff that you can use to make your costume. And I saw this and I'm like, you know what? This is not going out and buying a plastic costume, you know, and just putting it on. Like, you know, no offense against the Star Wars people, but you know, all those stormtroopers, they just buy a costume and they put it on. That's it. This is actually making your suit from scratch, like you would really do in the apocalypse. And I was just blown away by this. I mean, it was like an eye opener. It was amazing. But this guy that did it, his name is Ken Rising, just like, you know, like you would think Rising, like Rising Sun. The guy is brilliant. He actually was in charge of the whole post-apocalyptic track there at Dragon Con, so that was all his thing. He was actually the guy who dressed up like Toadie in the parade.
Oh, yeah.
So it was the same guy. But he had some wonderful ideas. I mean, the whole thing was just wonderful. It was absolutely – man, it blew me away. And I don't know if I'm going to go to Dragon Con next year. I would like to, but PAX is kind of more related to gaming and stuff that I need to cover. But if I do go to Dragon Con again, you can bet I'm going to have a suit ready. I'm going to have a costume ready.
Oh, man. Well, that's so perfect timing, too, because, like, and you know, I've mentioned this in the past. I so dig on the making your own, like, Fallout swag. And it kind of plays off, you know, it kind of, and you know, a lot of people say, why Fallout? You know, because, you know, I love the 50 stuff and I love the post-Holocaust type stuff. So, you know, I collect all kinds of swag from anything from Fallout to whatever. So I have, like, the posters on my wall. Like, I printed them out of, like, you know, the Nuka-Cola posters and stuff. And I have that book you gave me of the survival guide that's been signed and everything. And so when I hear something like this, I'm just like, oh my gosh, that plays like right into it, only on a better level.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was really amazing. And it was inspirational. I mean, they had a couple other people up there, and I mean, to be honest, their costumes weren't, well, there was a man and a woman, and the woman's costume was actually pretty cool because she put like fur in hers, like because she was a lot more into like thinking about a story about your costume. Like she said, you know,
wow.
if you had your costume, you don't just put it together. You got to think about why you put it together. So she put fur like under some of her armor because she said you want to be comfortable, you know, and you want that padding in there, and you want it to feel like, you know, the hide and the fur on your skin, so you're comfortable. And I'm like, yes, that's. You know, plus they even went so far as to say, you know what, in a desert, in like a desert wasteland, it gets pretty cold at night. So you want that option to be able to have some fur. They had some fur like hanging off of their outfit so that they could take it and put it over them during the night, you know, and I was like, man, that is just brilliant. And he even had a hook on the top of some of his shoulder armor. And he says, you know, you think this hook is just for looks? But then he showed us his mace that he made. He actually made a mace out of a baseball bat and nails. But, of course, he had to file the nails down because, you know, you can't bring, like, sharp objects in Dragon Con. And at the end of this mace was another hook. And he said, that hook looks like it would probably hurt, right? He says, no, it's actually just to hang it on my armor right here. So he thought, like, he had a storyline for his armor. And so did this woman. She had her storyline for her armor. And she had in the front. For her stomach, she had a plate that said "hot equipment." It was like taken from an industrial. You've seen those signs, right? The mm-hmm. industrial signs that say "hot equipment," and it's like a warning. So, you know, she was kind of doing a play on words because she was a woman, and you know, and she was hot equipment. And so she had that, but it had bullet holes in it. And she says, "You know what? I actually shot these bullet holes in here. I didn't, you know." I didn't
find
it. So she set it up like that, and it was funny because she said, "You know what? The bullet holes went all the way through, so you don't want to do this with, if you're making post-apocalyptic armor at the end of the world, don't use a sign like this because it'll go right through." But it was pretty cool. The guy actually, his armor I didn't like as much because it wasn't weathered. You know what I mean? Like the other guys took a lot of pride in weathering their stuff, and I thought it looked really cool. This guy had like bright, shiny shoulder pads, and then he had this big nuclear emblem painted on the side, and it was like all crisp and clean and everything. And I didn't like that. I like it looked like it scraped off, and you know, and things like that.
But, yeah, he found Walmart. He was the only guy.
Exactly. But man, that was really inspirational. It was really cool.
I'll be doggone. That is so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I like I said, I never would have thought that I would have gotten so excited about that until I actually saw it. And I just kind of went there on a whim. You know, I said, maybe I'll check this out and see, because I really like that parade. And, it was almost like in Close Encounters, you know, Richard Dreyfuss has to go home and make the mashed potato mountain. That's exactly what it's like. It's like I have to go home and I have to – like it's funny. I kept telling my girlfriend the whole rest of the weekend. I'm like, you know, I think I know what I'm going to do for one of the armbands. And she's like, oh, my God.
You're like making a V8 interceptor out of mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Terry Garr is in your kitchen crying. You're just like, shut up, mashed potatoes.
Yeah. But
that is amazing.
So, did you have any questions or anything about anything so far? Because I have a bunch more I want to talk about.
No, that I'm eating this up. This is, yeah, and just for the listeners, this is entirely new for me too. Sean hasn't set the stage at all. He made a special effort to make sure that I was hearing this at the exact same time you guys are. So, yeah, I'm sitting here probably doing what everybody else is doing, going awesome. Yeah, no, this is cool. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, so, okay, after that, or somewhere in there, I went to a post-apocalyptic roundtable with some authors, and I wish I could have gotten the names of all these authors. I was sitting pretty far in the back, and I couldn't really see their name tags. I didn't recognize them. They had, of course, S.M. Sterling, who you heard at the beginning of this episode doing the intro. I'll tell a little story about how I got that intro in a second. John Ringo, who is a very popular post-apocalyptic writer. And you know what's funny? I didn't realize this, but he actually lives in the same town I do.
No way.
Yeah, and I didn't know that until I heard him talk. And he's like, yeah, I live in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I'm like, hey, that's where I live. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, there were a few other writers in there that I didn't catch their names. There were two female writers, three more male writers. And I didn't catch the names. I wish I did, though. I'm sure if somebody looked it up – actually, I should probably look it up and see who these other writers are. But anyway, it was very, very entertaining. They played off of each other. They made jokes with each other. That was really cool. But it was also informative. They were talking more about how to break into, you know, writing post-apocalyptic books, and that was really cool. I always have, you know, this interest in writing and actually one day writing a novel. So that was a lot of interest to me. But what's funny, like I said, I was going to tell this story about S.M. Sterling. Of course, he writes Dies the Fire, which is a book that I just recently bought and I just started getting into this. I'm almost done with that book, actually, but I'm just getting into the whole series, the whole Emberverse and all that. And I'm really excited about it because I'm loving this. And I, you know, it's wonderful stuff. So I brought the book down to Dragon Con with every intent of getting him to sign it because I knew that he was going to be there. And I said, I'm just going to get him to sign it. Well, of course, I left the book in the hotel room. So I get to the panel, you know, I realized I left it, and I'm like, well, maybe I can catch him another time or something. But the panel ends, everybody rushes towards the front so they can talk to their favorite author, which just happens at all these panels. And I kind of made my way up there, but I was toward the end of the line, and by the time I got up there, he was like, well, I have to go because I have another panel. And I said, and then he saw me, and he says, okay, well, you know, really quickly. And I said, well, I don't have anything to sign, but I wondered if you could just give me an intro for a podcast I do called Through the Aftermath. Just really quick, just say, this is SM Sterling, and you're listening to Through the Aftermath. And he's like, okay, yeah, I'll do that, sure. So he recorded it, and I was so thankful. I mean, you know, it took a second, but it was so nice of him. Because I know there are a lot of people out there who get a little, little touchy about having their voice used on things that they don't know what it's for.
Oh, yeah.
I could be running a porn podcast, you know, and then he could be on there and, you know, and he wouldn't have known, you know, so it was very nice of him to do that for us without really knowing who we are or anything like that. But yeah, that was very exciting. He's a hilarious man. I mean, he is so funny and he has a very quick wit and, the way that a lot of them were going back and forth, he's on top, you know, he's on the ball, in addition to being a great author.
That is so cool. Yeah, that is really neat that you were able to get him.
Yeah, I was excited. I figured it would be a nice little treat. I wanted to do a little bit more, maybe get a couple other ones, like maybe even John Ringo. But he was actually in more of a hurry. He had to leave, like, immediately when he was done. You know, Dragon Con is fun, it's amazing, but it's so packed. Like, there are literally, there's four different hotels around this two-block area, and it's not in one central location. You know, there's basically the suites of all these hotels is where the different panels go on. So you have a half hour between each panel to get to the next hotel. So there's a lot of running, let me just say that.
Oh, so much like Guild Wars, everything is off of a central hub and you have your own personal instances.
Yeah, pretty much like that. Yeah, it's not nothing like that at all.
Yeah. Star Trek fans are not allowed. Hey!
Yeah.
It's nothing like that.
Yeah, let's see, what else did I do? There was another panel I saw talking about the future of post-apocalyptic media, and they were talking about not only books, mostly movies. They had a few directors on there. They actually had a guy who was in the movie Zombieland, the upcoming movie. He was funny as I saw him, and after when they did all the introductions, he's like, yeah, I'm so-and-so, and I was in the movie Zombieland. I said, oh, that's cool. I want to see that movie. And then when he got to explain what part he had, it was basically, you know, zombie number 40 or something. he talks about the scene he was in and how you get to see him really up close and everything, which, I mean, that's cool. You know, the guy was an extra in a movie. He actually said that Zombieland was his first movie, and then from there he went on and to be in other movies as extras or whatever. So that was kind of his springboard into the movie industry. But that was a pretty entertaining panel. I didn't get to stay for the whole thing because I had to run, but, they had a couple directors up there, they had a podcaster who does, post-apocalyptic, like zombie podcast, I think. So that was pretty cool. During this, now I have to say, I feel bad about this. Okay, I have to say this. You remember a couple shows back, we did the Jericho podcast, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Larissa was on there.
Yeah.
And I was telling Larissa that I was going to meet her at Dragon Con, right? Well, I forgot to email her beforehand, and we never touched base again. Well, at this panel, there was a girl who stood up, and before the panel even started, a girl stood up, and she said, does anybody want to record a little bit for a podcast I run? And I didn't pay any attention because there were people talking everywhere, and I didn't really think about it. And then she said, it's a Jericho podcast. Anybody just want to record something really quick? I don't know if she got someone to record with her, but I didn't put two and two together until a little bit later when, once the panel already started. Now, once it started, you know, she was sitting in the very front and I was sitting towards the back. So I couldn't like get up and go over there and be like, hey, you know, cause there was a panel going on. So, and then I had to leave halfway through it. So I didn't get to see her again, but I felt bad because that was her. That was Larissa from the podcast, that Jericho podcast. And I didn't get to say hi to her, but, Larissa, if you're listening, I saw you and I, in spirit, I waved to you. So, but like I said, I felt bad cause I didn't get to meet her after saying that I would. And she didn't even know that I was right there. But,
yeah. Afterward, you just talked to her via a secured laptop in which she replied, "Why are you lying to us?" And there's the Jericho joke for the day.
Yeah, that was
it. This is so much fun. I'm eating this up. Like, seriously, I am loving these stories. Like, this, I would love to have gone to something like that. And I always mean to go to these. And right now at this time, I actually end up on the other side of the country from it. But, yeah, this is so cool to hear.
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect. You know, I've never been there. I knew that there was going to be a post-apocalyptic track, and I was excited about that, but I really had no idea it was going to be so cool. I mean, there it's just amazing. And like those people who dressed up at the parade, actually all of the people who dress up as groups in the parade are part of a club, kind of like a group, and they get together and they plan this stuff out. They plan out who's going to wear what and things like that. You know, of course, the Star Wars one is probably the biggest. It's called the 501st. It's a big group, and I think it might just be in the Southeast. I'm not sure, but it's a big group. I mean, there were, I would say, probably 100 Star Wars costumes altogether. I mean, there were dozens and dozens of stormtroopers. There was a guy dressed up like Darth Vader. There were all the Imperial guards around him. There were even like the Crimson guards, and they had it really, really set up well. They had sand people. They had, you know, they had everything. They had a lot of Boba Fetts. So they were the most organized. And the post-apocalyptic guys, the Raiders, were their own group. Like I said, probably 15, maybe 20 of them there. But that car, that Lord Humongous vehicle was, that was the star of the show right there. That thing was amazing. So I imagine, I'd like to find out more about this actually. I should have talked to him, but I would really like to find out more about how they, you know, assemble, how they plan for something like this, how they get it all together. I think that guy, Ken Rising, I think he was pretty much in charge of that, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe I might look that up and see if I can learn a little bit more about that, because I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, maybe even next year if they do something like that again, maybe I'll have to find a way. You know, I've got some time to plan. Maybe meet up with give the heads up, have some people from our listener group like meet up out there or something.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That would be wild.
Now, that's another thing is I know that there are a few listeners from the Atlanta area said that they were going to that, and I didn't get to meet up with any listeners. Yeah, if we're going to do that again, that would definitely be cool because it was that's the place to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
But other than that, let's see. I think that's about it. That's pretty much all I saw from the post-apocalyptic side. But to end my weekend on Sunday night, I went to a party thrown by the Fallen Earth developers. And actually, what's funny is I began and I ended my weekend with Fallen Earth. The very first panel I saw on Friday morning at 11 o'clock was a Fallen Earth panel talking about how, you know, it had an artist. Actually, they were all story content writers. And it had the guy who one of the guys who pretty much started the crafting system in Fallen Earth, which, you know, I bow at his feet. And I wish I could remember all their names. I know one of them was Ian. I really wish I could remember their names, but I didn't get their cards or anything. Branish was the other guy's name. Branish, I think. Anyway, so they had a panel, really cool. And during the panel, they gave out these cards to meet them at this bar on Sunday night. Called I don't remember the name of the bar, but anyway, you get two free drinks, and you know, it'd be like a little get together. And I figured, yeah, that'd be pretty cool. The panel itself had maybe 20 people in it, so I didn't think it was going to be that big. Sunday night rolls around, we head out to that bar, and it was packed. I mean, there were a lot of people there. It was really cool. We had like our own little area set aside with its own little bar. It was kind of like they reserved that side of it, which was really cool. And the developers are all there. There's about, I don't know, maybe six or seven developers who were kind of in charge. They had the shirts on, the Fallen Earth shirts, which is kind of funny because I wore my Fallen Earth shirt. And I think they were kind of like, yeah, we're supposed to be wearing those shirts, not you. but you know, they didn't say anything, of course. But, yeah, so I got to meet up with a few of these guys. I like I said, I was talking to the guy who did the those two factions. And I didn't catch his name, but I believe his forum name is Sonata. I believe that's what it is. I don't know if
that rings a bell.
Does it? Okay. He was a great guy. He was there taking pictures. So I imagine they're going to have pictures up on their site pretty soon of the party. But he was there taking pictures. Great guy. He sat down. You know, we were sitting there eating. They had free food. So I'm like stuffing my face. And he comes up and he introduced himself. And then he was asking if I had any questions about Fallen Earth. And I told him I was in the beta, but I didn't get very far. You know, I got like level 12 or 13. And he's like, well, you have any questions at all about anything? I'd be happy to ask. So they had these little brochures there that were kind of a summary of what's in Fallen Earth. You know, they had a summary of the crafting system and the combat and the factions and everything. And I looked at the faction wheel, which is actually in the back of this pamphlet or this brochure, and I said, yeah, you know what? And like I said, I asked him. I said, yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, I do have a question. So I asked him about the faction thing. That's when he told me that you can be in a guild with different factions and all this stuff. So then we get to talk a little bit more. So actually, what's funny is at the time I was thinking I need to be recording this because I have a horrible memory when it comes to being kind of overwhelmed with excitement. You know what I mean? So I'm like, this is so great. You know, this is so great. And I forgot a lot of what he said. But then they also had a demo there where they were showing. Surprisingly, there were a lot of people there who didn't play the game and they didn't know what to expect. So they had a big screen monitor there and they were showing off the game, showing people anything they wanted to see. And they said, you know, we'll take you to the high end areas, whatever you want to see. We'll, you know, any questions you have. So they were demoing it, which is really cool. Their lead QA guy, his name is Jeremiah McCoy. He was great. He says he listens to Through the Aftermath. He's a big fan. He's also a fan of Massively, which was bonus for me.
Cool.
He was the greatest because he – now, I'm not just saying that because I know he's listening to this. he really was the greatest. We sat and we talked about everything from the whole post-apocalyptic thing. We talked about MMOs. We talked about the future of MMOs, the past of MMOs, you know, what's the trends. I mean, we talked about a lot of stuff. He was really great. He does his own podcast too, but – you know, so he was interested in a lot more than that. A couple other people I talked to, they said, now I don't know if you noticed this, but we got tweeted, I guess you would say, by Fallen Earth for our last episode. Did you catch that?
We did indeed. In fact, yeah. The way I caught it was the forum. Somebody was commenting on the intro and then on the rest of the show, which, of course, you know, brought a sigh of relief because I'm like, 10 minutes, boy, I really overdid it on that.
but Jeremiah is the one who heard that, I guess, and introduced the rest of the team. He said he passed it around the team. He said he showed it to Colin Dwan, who was on the show before, and Colin was like, this is great. Like, he was just so excited about it because, you know, we gave an honest overview of that game, you know, good and bad, and I think that's but that's what anybody would expect and respect, because if we were just going to sit there and be like, this game is so amazing, it's so amazing, there's nothing wrong with it at all, I think even the devs would be like, yeah, you know. So I think they appreciated our honesty and everything. But, yeah, we talked about that. We talked about everything, and it was really great to just hang out with those guys you know, I pushed the podcast a little bit on the others who've never heard of the podcast or maybe just heard it that one time. I'm like, yeah, you got to listen to it more.
Yeah,
one question I do remember asking, because there were a few that I was, you know, when you get in a situation like that, you can't remember what you want to ask, and it always happens to me. So I sat down and I was kind of watching the demo, and I said, you know what? I had one question. When you get mutations further on in the game, do they change your appearance at all? like, can you get so mutated that your arm will turn into, you know, a gun or something? And right. He says, no, it won't be anything like that. He says they actually played with that idea at one time, but it would be just a whole lot of work to get that set up. And I mean, it's not like they're being lazy, but it's just, it would change a lot. So, and also, yeah, I guess the biggest reason they don't want to do that is PvP. They don't want people to be able to see that you have all these crazy mutations, and then, you know, they'll be scared of you, or if you don't have any mutations, then they'll attack you first. They want it to kind of be an even playing field as far as appearance. So I thought that was pretty cool. Wow. I asked him about the time it takes to get on and off mounts. You know, I said, actually my girlfriend wanted me to ask this. She's like, cause she doesn't play, but she watches me play. Mm-hmm. She said, can you ask him why it takes so long to get on and off a horse? So I said, okay, you know, there'll be times when I press the button to get on the horse and it'll take a few seconds. And I said, is this by design? He says, yeah, absolutely. He says, you know, it takes, he says, if you were gotten on a real horse, it takes a while, right? I'm like, yeah,
right.
I guess it does. So they want to do that. And like with the ATV and the motorcycle, it doesn't take as long. Like you just hop right on those. So yeah, that was definitely by design. Another thing, these are just flying through my mind, so excuse my scatterbrainedness, but I'm kind of saying them as I remember them. One thing that I thought was really cool, now I don't know if you played with this, but speaking of PvP, when you go to the skirmish towns, we talked about this last episode, the skirmish towns, and we were kind of uncertain on the PvP. We didn't know what was out there. I asked him about that, and they explained it a little bit more. And it's amazing. It really is. You go, your faction can take over a skirmish town. If your faction has taken over that skirmish town, you can enter it and you know, you won't get attacked or anything. Of course, the opposite side of the spectrum will get attacked. Once you own a skirmish town, your incentive to keep it is the fact that you can do missions, you can do little quests for the guards, and each faction is different. So, and each town is different, actually, too. So let's say that you go to one and they say, hey, can you get us more supplies? We need supplies because we're sitting here guarding this gate the whole time. So you run out, you do these little, like you get, I don't know, you just get certain supplies for them, like bullets or whatever. Bring it back to them, and it'll actually level the guards. So you actually level, or in some cases you level them, in other cases you just get them better equipment. So that's your incentive to keep these towns, is you get the guards stronger, you get them higher level, you get them just so that they can defend better. And once you start doing that, then you'll be able to keep the town, you know, you'll be able to keep it longer, and you'll be able to make it yours. So I think that's brilliant, because that gives you incentive more than just taking over town and sitting there and going,
yeah,
now what do I do?
It gives purpose more, a lot more.
Yeah, because now it's your town. Like merchants are different. I think there's like discounts for you know, for things that you buy once it's your town, things like that. I thought that was absolutely brilliant, and like I said, I'm not a PvP player, but it almost makes me want to play PvP. It's a pretty
good. No, I agree. This is good stuff, because you know, this is the stuff that that people need to really promote. Like, because people out there are like, well, what's the point of PvP? See, I didn't even know, and I'm on the forums and everything else, and obviously, you know, we probably saturate ourselves with so much info our head explodes, but I mean, it's, you know, the fact I didn't even know that. I mean, hearing all this makes me want to play the PvP side now. Yeah. And it's great. I mean, it's just another piece of that puzzle of these things that are hidden under the hood of this game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty amazing to me. I think that there's so much out there that a lot of people don't really realize until they start playing the game or until they ask questions. And I just keep finding more and more that, I don't know, that it just makes it almost like the perfect game, you know? I mean, it needs a little bit of polish, but other than that, it's a great game.
It's very EVE Online-ish. A lot hidden under the hood. You have to get past the initial layer, but once you get past that layer, I mean, you will find yourself, you cannot stop playing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That was basically my Dragon Con impressions, and I wanted to thank those guys from Fallen Earth, because they were just the greatest. I mean, they were so hospitable, and the way that they sat down, I mean, I didn't get to talk to all of them, you know, the whole night, of course, but they would go around and sit down with other groups of players who were sitting around eating or just drinking, you know, and they would just talk to them, ask them if they had any questions about the game, tell them about the game, And they were so nice about it. And I think that was – those types of things go so much further than seeing an ad on the side of a web page. Because – and it's probably a whole hell of a lot cheaper. You know what I mean? They had that that national tour, that grassroots tour that they did a few months ago during the summer. And they would just go around and do the same thing. So I think that that is working really well for them. I think that they're approaching this the right way. And I wish them nothing but the best of luck. Definitely.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's always been, you know, a big thing for me. A lot of this is why this game has always been on the forefront of my mind. And, you know, obviously being post-apocalyptic is the about 80% of it. But, you know, this studio has shown, you know, that they are definitely, you know, they listen to the players. And, you know, obviously they've got, you know, making an MMO is not an easy thing. Everybody knows this.
Yeah.
But I have never seen a dev team so absolutely determined to make the game as good as they can make it and be part of the, you know, the people that want to play it. And it just, that really means a lot. And that's why I believe that, you know, this game will, you know, you hear occasional people like, you know, the kids who have never heard of this game. They're like, oh, let's see how long it's around. You know, it's like, no, this game isn't going anywhere. Yeah. It's going to have a community because it has developers that care.
Yeah.
And that is why I will probably be a long-termer.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd have to agree. And I don't know. We talked a lot about this everything last week, so I don't want to make this another Fallen Earth show part two. But I mean, it's so easy for us to do because we really love this game. But yeah, we can talk more about it in the forums and get more into that. And like I said, you know, we'll have a clan section and all that, so we can talk about that. But before we wrap up the show, we have had a lot of emails, and we're kind of getting behind. We have some as far back as July, mid July. So I wanted to read a few, and I know we've had dedicated email shows in the past, but I wanted to just kind of chip away at this a little bit with this show, and maybe we'll start doing that more, just kind of read a few every show. But the first one I wanted to read was actually it's a pretty recent one, but it applies because it's a correction to our last show where we talked about Fallen Earth. And so let me read this. It says, I've been in the FE beta since the end of July, focusing primarily on crafting. I really liked your impressions for episode 18, but you made a bit of an error while talking about the crafting system. Your trade skills are not capped by your level. They are capped by a combination of your intelligence and perception stats. They only appear to be level capped because all of your stats increase slightly when you level up. You can raise those two stats outside of leveling, though, by spending AP earned through experience gains, such as crafting, at a ratio of 5 AP per 1 stat point. Otherwise, great episode. Keep Wastelanderin, signed Ruck. So Ruck, yeah, thank you for that, because that's actually a really good point. That was something that I didn't pay that close attention to, but now that you say it, you're absolutely right, because there were times when I used AP points for my intelligence or perception, and then I was able to boost my trade skills, and I never put two and two together that, hey, I was still able to do this and I'm the same level as I was before. I never really put two and two together. So you're absolutely right. And I thank you for pointing that out. All right. So, let's see. Let's do another one here. I'm kind of picking and choosing,
sure,
where they apply, because there are a few about Fallen Earth and I wanted to get these out. There's one here. It's a really quick one. And it is, it says, hi, I listened to your podcast for a while, and I was wondering if maybe you have a guild in Fallen Earth beta. If so, how do I get a hold of you? And, so I just wanted to say, his name is Michael, actually I think that's how you pronounce it. And, so I just wanted to say, yeah, you know, go on the forums. We're going to get that started really soon, and I really, really look forward to getting in a clan with, some other Through the Aftermath listeners.
Yeah, we're on the edge of a really exciting thing here. I mean, you know, having the show right alongside the game launch, I mean, this is going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. All right, and some of these are a little bit older. Like I said, back to July. I'm going to go ahead and read some of these. There's one. It's a whole bunch of corrections to our Hiroshima show. So I wanted to read this. It's kind of a long email, but I'll get through it. And there's not really – I don't think there's really asking any questions, but it's a lot of corrections for that. And I want to make sure I get this out there because I want to make sure that people are informed. It says, "Hey guys, I just finished your Hiroshima and Nagasaki show and it was great, but I wanted to make a few points because I'm annoying like that." he said that, not me. The first four are relatively short. The fifth is a whole other kettle of fish. Number one, the German submarine that you mentioned the U.S. got uranium from, U-234, was not a nuclear-powered submarine, but a conventional submarine that was transporting uranium and scientific information to Japan.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, and he says, earlier in the war, the Germans had been working on a nuclear program with the aim of powering a submarine, but it never even made it to the prototype stage and was scrapped by 1944.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that's interesting. Number two, the danger of the nuclear weapons exploding prematurely is actually very small. In order to achieve the supercritical mass needed for the chain reaction, the density of the fissile material must be dramatically increased. Simply putting the two subcritical masses adjacent to each other will not cause a reaction. What was dangerous was the conventional explosive, which, if it went off, could have compressed the fissile material and make a portion of it react. This would have been devastating, but it would have been a fraction of the size of the bombs when detonated intentionally. So that's
right.
That's when we were talking about the transport of the bombs and how they had to be careful. And I think we speculated a little bit on why they were being careful. But so this Charles, this is from Charles. He really knows his stuff, so I believe him on that one. The third one, he says, you also mentioned the weight of Little Boy, the Hiroshima bomb, saying it was 60 kilograms. That was the weight of the fissile material, the U-235, which would form a sphere about the size of a dodgeball. So, yeah, that makes sense. Just the material itself inside the bomb, the U-235, was 60 kilograms. The bomb itself was probably much, much heavier.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Number four, he says, another anecdote you told was about Truman changing his mind at the last minute about whether or not he wanted to drop the bomb. By August 1945, Truman no longer had the ability to stop the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, having given the Army Air Corps the green light almost a month prior. This is actually one of the main focuses of contemporary scholarship about the bomb, examining how much control and decision-making was actually exercised by Truman and his advisors. So he's saying that this was a big topic of discussion here about, you know, what Truman was actually capable of you know, what kind of power he had over this. And I think that in 1945, it was not thought of as much as it is now, basically because of that situation. So that's good to know. It's definitely good to know.
Yeah.
And number five, this is his long one, and it's about half the email here, so bear with me. It says, lastly, and most controversially, I'd like to address your statement about the potential casualties if the bombs had not been dropped. Now, just a side note here. We knew this was going to come up as a topic.
Yeah, we did. We did.
Yeah. He says, while we, of course, cannot be certain what would have happened, there are many indicators that the United States would never have had to stage an invasion of Japan and that the idea of millions of Americans' lives being saved by the atom bombs is hyperbole at best and a conscious reimagining of history at worst. The idea that the bomb saved millions of American lives is largely credited to an article by Harry Stimson, Secretary of War for FDR and Truman, and he was also the overseer of the Manhattan Project, which was written for the 1947 issue of Harper's Magazine. And this was titled The Decision to Use the Atom Bomb, where Stimson, with the aid of McGeorge Bundy, wrote just that. Later in life, Stimson and Bundy both reneged on their statement and stated that it had no basis in fact and did not draw upon an official casualty estimates made by the Army for the potential invasion of Japan. So he's saying here that this is based on something that, you know, the Secretary of War basically wrote, but then went back later and said, no, actually, that's not true. So I think that's where we can source something like that. Sure. He goes on and says that Truman actually made a similar statement to that, where he said that in his memoirs, he said that 500,000 is what he said the lives would be saved. But he later distanced himself from the statement. And then he named some other people who have uncovered the casualty estimates would have been around 46,000. I mean, a lot of from here, this is all speculation and kind of scientific, you know, hypothesis into how many lives could have been saved, you know, by us bombing them first.
Right.
And then he goes on and he says, your own anecdote about how in the surrender of Japan, Emperor Hirohito addressed not the atomic bombs, but the entry of Soviet Union into the war is another important point. And that's something that I was talking about. He says, under FDR, the United States continually asked Stalin, who is the what do they call it? Not the president, but he was the leader of Soviet Union at the time, to enter the war in the Pacific, believing that it would prompt a surrender from Japan. So we were pushing for that. You know, FDR was pushing for that for a long time. The Army Chief of Staff, George Marshall, was instrumental in pushing for this plan also. Curtis LeMay, head of the Army Air Corps Strategic Bombing Campaign against Japan, he was loath to have Soviet assistance, and he argued that Japan would surrender from constant conventional bombing. So it went back and forth. You know, there, some were saying that we need to get the Soviet Union in there, and that would make Japan surrender, and then others were saying that it would, like Curtis LeMay, were saying, it's just bombing. We just need to bomb them. He goes on and he talks a little bit more about this, and actually he quotes Stephen Ambrose, who's an author, and I love his work. I've read a couple of his books. He says he quoted Dwight D. Eisenhower in the 60s as saying, Japan was at that very moment seeking some way to surrender with a minimal loss of face. That face that Eisenhower is alluding to is the Emperor of Japan. The Japanese government needed to ensure that the Emperor retained his throne. Otherwise, the basis for a united Japanese nation would be lost. And an analogy would equate the Emperor with the Constitution of the United States. So I think basically what he's saying is, you know, that this is – I mean, I was partially right. I think we learn a lot about – or the fact that Japan learns that it wasn't us. It wasn't the bombing. It was the Soviet Union entering because they're trying to save face is basically what he's saying. So and that's kind of what I was saying, but I think he elaborates on a lot. And I just wanted to make sure that I got that out there. But his last paragraph, he says – at least he has a sense of humor about it. He says, now that I've severely complicated this topic, I will say that it is impossible to know what would or would not have prompted the surrender of Japan or what would have happened if the U.S. had not dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And what is important that is that we attempt to better understand the events leading to one of the most tragic events in human history so that the use of atomic weapons is one that we never have to make again. And I think he's absolutely right, and that's something that was an underlying message in that show that we did. It was, you know, we want to get this out there so that people know that being one of the first times an atomic bomb was used in a capacity like this, it really laid the groundwork for a lot of other things that were, you know, to say, let's not do this again. You know, let's think of other alternatives before we do something like this. So, right. Yeah, that's basically what Charles is saying here too. And I really appreciate him writing in because he gave some great stuff. I didn't read the whole thing because it's a really long email. But he gave some great pointers on kind of clarifying a lot of the things that we talked about. So I definitely appreciate that, Charles. Thanks for the email.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he brought some points to the table that I hadn't even thought of. And I remember, you know, when we did that episode, almost being overwhelmed by not only the amount of information coming out, because you're dealing with not only fact, but a lot of, political opinion as well. And just kind of like wading through it going, how best to do this? And, you know, it's interesting because it was a wonderful learning experience. And then, you know, here it is again, you know, we're learning things we didn't know about it. And yeah, thanks so much for writing in and sharing that. That's definitely stuff I'll be filing away in my mind in case, you know, I ever have this conversation again.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. Jonathan and I had a little bit of trouble with that episode when we recorded it. It's hard to do something like that and just read it, you know, and just state fact like that. I don't think we're going to do another show quite so dry like that. I mean, I know
that
a lot
tough.
Of people. Yeah, it was really tough to do. A lot of people liked it though, but I think it was pretty dry. We're so much better at shows like the last one where we just kind of sit down and go, you know, it was actually completely unprepared. Actually, this one was too, but we just sit down and just give our experiences and tell what we liked or don't like. That show, that Hiroshima and Nagasaki show, is was difficult for the reason that it was a lot of fact that we knew we had to get right. There were many times we stopped during that show and we're like, okay, wait, we got to look this part up real quick. So while we may do things like that in the future, I just, I just wanted to say that it was, we set ourselves up for a lot of feedback on that, definitely, for a lot of clarification. But yeah. But I appreciate it. I appreciate the clarifications, definitely. All right, this let's see. We'll read one more. I don't want to read too many. We have about 20, like I said. I'm just kind of chipping into these a little bit. But we have one more I want to read. It's a pretty short one. It's from Alex, and he says, "Hey, guys, Alex again. Hope you caught my other email. Anyway, the difference between a zombie and an infected is a zombie has died but has been reanimated. An infected is more like a rabid animal and are always caused by a virus. Infected can run, jump, and learn, and they also need their own organs, or all their organs. A zombie can only slowly shuffle and only needs its brain. That's why you got to shoot them in the head. Zombies also don't need to breathe." I didn't know that. P.S. Zombies are caused by a virus too, but it kills them before making them want to eat people. It's called Solanum. And then he says, "Thank you, Zombie Survival Guide, and thank you Through the Aftermath." So some helpful tips there on defining zombies.
Yeah, I'm personally a fan of that, and somebody out there is going to be like, blasphemy, because we have some George Romero, Romeroites, if you will. I'm actually kind of a sucker for the infected side, and it's, you know, coming from watching, 28 Days Later and, movies like that, because I love the fact that they move very quickly, and even playing Left 4 Dead just kind of like solidified that, but it's interesting that we use the term zombie so loosely, and he's exactly right there. Not all of them are dead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is a very good point to define the two. I'm sure some zombie aficionados are like, they get a little upset when people just call it. I mean, that would be like if you saw like a you saw Captain Kirk and you were like, "Hey, wasn't that guy in Star Wars?" Oh man.
Yeah, it must sound horrible to people, but and here's your homework assignment. Is Keith Richards infected or is he a zombie? Discuss. I'll let you know. And I again, that's probably something we won't try to get into because of the blasphemy of it. So
yeah, that's your homework. That's awesome. Well, I guess what we'll do is we'll knock out the rest of these emails on future shows. So if you've written to us and we haven't read it on the show yet, we'll definitely do that. The next one is still from July. We still have a few left from July, but we'll get to those in the next show and we'll try to whittle away at those little by little. But yeah, I guess that's about it. Was there anything else you want to mention since I completely took over this whole episode?
No, actually, you know what? And that's one point I wanted to make too. I really enjoyed this. Every episode we've done has had kind of a different feel to a different theme. Mm-hmm. You know, the email episodes are usually kind of the same, even though we're bringing different content, which keeps it fresh. But it was kind of nice to kind of be the listener this time. And it was, I was as excited hearing this stuff as you were probably telling it. And it's, I can't wait to go check out these movies when you post them. And on top of that, you got the forum, so it's perfect timing. I mean, everybody can be, sharing links, and we're all going to be making our Raider outfits just in time for Halloween. And, of course, out here, probably just enough time to be picked up by the police for it. But, yeah, no, thanks for, bringing those stories back. And, that's one place where I was kind of bummed out. I was like, man, I wish I could have, gone to that kid. That would have worked out perfect. But, it kind of being last second, it was a little difficult, but next year I'll definitely be trying to go to that for sure.
Yeah, that'd be great. And another thing, I don't have the best memory. It lasts for about a week before I completely forgot, so I was really excited to record this a couple days after I got home, because I just unleashed my memory. Now if you ask me about this in a week and you're like, "Hey, remember when you talked about that thing?" I'd be like, what? I don't remember that. Because it's like it emptied my brain, and so I just unleashed it all. But yeah, I'm it was a lot of fun. I'm glad I was able to retain a few stories to tell people. And I, if people for next year, like even Jonathan, like you were saying, you might go, but next year if people want to go to Dragon Con and they live nearby and they're kind of, they don't know what to expect, it's worth it if you're a big-time post-apocalyptic fan just for that whole apocalypse track. It's great. And Ken Rising, the guy who does the track, is wonderful. He knows his stuff. He was talking about it was funny, at the very end of one of his panels, he said, if anyone out there is into video games, you want to play something that's the most amazing video game ever, post-apocalyptic, go play Wasteland. And I'm like, yes! Yes! And I'm like, this guy knows what he's talking about. And it was funny, like I said in the other panel, they mentioned Wasteland, and people are like, what? What? Then you say Fallout, and they're like, yeah, Fallout! So, but the guy's great. He knows what he's doing, and he knows what he's talking about. And, hey, maybe we should try to get him on the show.
That would be really, really cool.
I'm going to try for that. Yeah, I'm going to write that down. I'm going to try for that. That would be really cool. But yeah, you know, if you're kind of iffy on if you should go or not, I would definitely check it out next year. It's right around Labor Day weekend. I think it's on Labor Day weekend every year. So you have only 11 and a half more months.
Well, and hopefully they don't put PAX the same weekend. That was a dirty trick.
It was. That was horrible. But yeah, that's about it for us for this show. You can email us at show@throughtheaftermath.com. You can check out our Facebook page where we have a little discussion board there. We also have a Twitter where I try to Twitter the latest news. I usually Twitter after we record to let people know that they can expect a show pretty soon. And you can also check out the newly reborn forums, which will be at throughtheaftermath.com. There will be a link to it there. Check that out. Also check out the show notes for today, where I'll have a few links to a few more things, including Dragon Con's webpage. And I'll try, if I can, I'll probably get the video out after I post these notes, but I'll try to get a link to the parade, the Dragon Con parade, for the show notes for today. But I guess that's about it. So from all of us here at Through the Aftermath,
stay alive out there. We'll see you online. Stay alive in there, too. Well, that's really cool. You got to talk to the Fallen Earth developers, man. You got to meet them face-to-face and everything.
Yeah, and you know what I was really surprised at?
What's that?
They're actually not aliens.